Welcome to our continuing podcast series from IFR Magazine. IFR editor Jeff Van West interviews terminal procedures expert and FAA gadfly Dog Brenneman. Brenneman describes the two most overlooked items in preparing for an instrument flight, explains why ATC doesn't care how you fly the hold, and tells how to stay on an airway after the CDI needle literally falls off the instrument.
I'm talking with Dog Brenneman. And Dog, why don't you explain what your background is so that people listening in have an idea of your perspective on approach procedures and chirps?
Well, my background is, first of all, as a student pilot in the Air Force, I became exceedingly interested in instrument flight procedures because of the missions that I was going to take flying in Southeast Asia, where you flew in the weather without air traffic control all by yourself. And, in our case, two people cockpit. But, you really had to know your stuff or you just didn't come back and land and drink a beer at the bar.
And so what are you doing now in terms of, I know you do CFI training, you do flight training, but you also do your seminars, right?
Yes, actually, I trained so many lieutenants in the Air Force as an instructor, I won't be a civil CFI. I'm still having nightmares. I'm now at a high level, I call it an aviation consultant. And basically what I do is spend a lot of time to put together these advanced seminars to train the CFIIs and that sort of stuff in, why the words are written someplace, why the words could be, incorrect, or why they're a contradiction to wording someplace else. And a lot of it is just teaching airspace.
So what would you say is the most commonly overlooked item in preparing for a departure?
The biggie, the absolute most commonly overlooked item is the little textual ODP, the obstacle departure procedure, the written one, the one that's in the front of the MAKO books and that's on the bottom of the JEP airport page. And, of course, that's been the cause of many, many CFITs on departure.
What about that? You're saying that it's the cause of a whole bunch of controlled flight into terrain. Can you give me a specific example?
Well, yes, of course, one of the most famous was the Air Force's crash at Jackson Hole. C-130 left and just turned to the first point on the computer flight plan and didn't make it. The use of the little written departure, I call it, for those that don't like to call it the textual ODP, is not well trained in a lot of instrument courses. And yet it's absolutely the first way you get your wheels off the runway and get into the en route system safely. And by not training in that correctly in the use of the textual ODP, pilots kind of, put it aside when they get a heading, for instance. If you're taxiing out and they say, after departure, fly heading 230, climb maintain 4000, yada, yada, yada. Most pilots will put a SID or they'll put the approach book away or the JEP book, and they just set their heading bug on that heading. They go, wheels lift off, gear up, flaps up, and turn to that heading. And they're totally not looking at a textual ODP that probably should be flown before they turn to the air traffic control heading.
We talked about that in the article. Let's switch gears and switch over to approaches. If you could change one thing about the way our system for designing approaches is set up, what would that be?
Well, the one thing I would change was I would eliminate holding and procedure turn airspace as separate items and just have one concept of here's a piece of airspace, a table in the sky, so to speak, and you have to stay on the table. And then you can use it for whatever you want. You can wait, you can maneuver, you can turn around. And that would kind of align everything with the laws of physics. If we go to Marysville, they have a procedure turn. Well, if we fly it at 100 knots and 15 degrees of bank, we have a given turn radius and by the laws of physics. And then we go, that's a procedure turn. We go from Marysville down to Sacramento, executive, and they have a holding pattern in lieu of, is what pilots call it. Our turn radius is still the same. So why do we have a different piece of airspace? And if you put one on top of the other, they're really pretty close in size and shape. And the irony in some of this is ICAO even has a different shaped holding pattern than we do. So does that mean a French A320 has a different turn radius, you know, than, you know, Northwest A320? No, it doesn't. So we only need, you know, just a little bit of airspace and would, you know, simplify a lot of things and do away with all these maneuvers and let the pilot just do what the pilot wants to turn around or hold and that sort of thing. There's people now that believe, for instance, let's say you were coming up to a holding pattern exactly backwards. A good maneuver in that case is the 8260. Turn 90 on the holding side, swap it around, you roll out back on course. It's almost a no-brainer. Yet people say, well, you can't use an 8260 to enter holding. Actually, you can. It works fine, lasts a long time. And once you understand the airspace, you go, well, wow, I didn't go any further than a normal turn, you know, in the holding pattern. So then the pilot could choose teardrop, you know, all the maneuvers that the pilot wanted to use at that point in time as an option to, you know, more flexible flying.
So you're saying even if it's charted as a hold on an approach, say, you could still pull in 8260 turn, spin around, and come right back in?
Oh, yes. Yeah. And the controller doesn't care. And everybody's going, well, the controller will see me, you know. No, when you're cleared to hold, you get a certain piece of airspace, and that's yours to own until you leave the holding pattern. And you can do anything you want in the holding pattern. You can write your name if you want. Many years ago, when I got back from Vietnam, I had to get back into flying because of my stay over there in the Hanoi Hilton. And we used to go down and fly the T-38 simulators. And, of course, we had to fly them before the regular students. So that meant about 0400 in the morning, pretty early. So they had a little canopy on the T-38 simulator and just a little hole where you could look in and out so the instructor could look at you. And the instructor ran a panel that had a piece of plexiglass on it. And a little anchor would go around and trace your ground track. And then you would analyze the ground track, and, you know, it helped in training. Well, at 0400 in the morning, you know, it's pretty early. And so you'd go over there, and you'd peek out the hole, and you'd see the instructor's eyes closing a little bit and the chin starting to head for the chest. So I would enter the hold, and I would start writing my initials in the holding pattern using skywriting techniques, you know, turn radius either doubled or halved and that sort of stuff. And pretty soon you'd see the instructor wake up, and he'd look at him and say, what in the hell are you doing? And I says, well, I'm writing my name in the holding pattern. He said, you can't do that. And I said, sure I can. And I says, you're not supposed to be sleeping on duty either, Sergeant. And then you'd get this, oh, we got to talk. And it usually end up in, how did you do that? And then the instructor sometimes would get in, and I'd show him the multiples of turn radius, and he'd have a good time.
So tell me, Doug, what do you teach people in setting up for an approach?
The absolute first thing I teach them is you get out the terrain chart and you start looking at the approach as it, you know, overlies the terrain. And that gives you the first feeling of, do I have a problem or not? Now, an ILS to Hutchinson, Kansas, is not much we can talk about. But when you get into the mountains, well, down at Salinas, California, we flew down there a while back. The approach comes down through a valley, and you pretty much have to know which way to favor. The one side of the valley is lower terrain than the other.
Now, when you say favor, I mean TERPS is providing you with obstacle clearance anywhere within the approved track. If you're flying the black line or some proximity, you should be in the clear. Why is terrain so important, then?
Well, because looking at some of the accidents we've had in the last few years, pilots are exiting the TERPS airspace, either due to technique, something unknown, push the wrong button in the cockpit. With all the options now, GPS, VOR1, VOR2, you know, ILS, it's pretty easy to get in some buttonology problems, or winds. So if you know which way to favor, like ocean to the right, big mountain to the left, it will actually subconsciously determine how you fly the approach. You'll have the needle maybe more to the left. Your error will be more to the needle to the left than it would be needle to the right.
Basically, what I hear you saying, if I got this right, is you look at the terrain so you know if you're going to screw up, at least screw up left, of course, rather than right, of course.
Yes, that sort of thing. And remember, if you're flying to a runway near the ocean, I mean, there is TERPS geometry there, but remember, the clear area can go all the way to Hawaii, whereas on the other side, it doesn't happen that way. My big philosophical push in all my seminars is that a pilot never dies from something a pilot knows. A pilot always dies from something a pilot doesn't know. And so the name of the game is safety is really knowledge. And the more knowledge you have, the better you do when Murphy throws a catch-22 at you. And then Murphy's actually a pretty forgiving guy. If he throws a problem at you and you solve it, Murphy generally says, I'm going to let this one live and keep it in the gene pool. Remember the fork-tailed doctor killer, the Bonanza?
Yeah.
Well, there was actually a doctor flying a Bonanza. But the doctor was the old, Narco Mark 12, 90 channel, one VOR needle, flying out west, bouncing around, flying at the MEA to stay below the ice, in the clouds, and he's flying around, and he's bouncing, and the needle broke off. The VOR needle broke off and fell to the bottom of the case on his, 3 1/8-inch instrument. What do you do now? Well, doctors are smart. They have a lot of math and physics, and they read. And the doctor's sitting there, and he says, well, I know the two-from flag circuitry is independent from the needle. He read that. So he added 90 degrees to the course he wanted to fly, the VOR radial, and then just kept the two-from flag bouncing back and forth, two-from, and that would mean he's on the radial he really wants by keeping the two-from flag just, in a neutral position, so to speak. And ended up flying for another something like 45 minutes and did part of an instrument approach with the two-from flag technique before he broke out and landed. Now, there's a case where Murphy let this one live.
If someone wanted to contact you to attend one of your courses, how would they do that?
Just send me a note to my email.
And that email is dog@Inteliband, INTELIBAND.net. Is that the one?
That's Charlie.
Thanks a lot, Dog.
Old dog over and out, and just don't call me Shirley. That was an old girlfriend.
To learn more about this and other topics important to instrument and accomplished pilots, subscribe to IFR Magazine. You can check it out online at www.ifr-magazine.com. Comments on this audiocast welcome, audio news at avweb.com. I'm Mike Blakeney, and thanks for listening.